are listening to Let's Go JoJo, the weekly JoJo's Bizarre Adventure podcast from Dynamite in the Brain and Secret of the Sailor Madness. So come along and hang with the Let's Go gang. It's Dwayne.
Hello.
Blimey, it's Niall.
Hola.
And it's me, Brian. Tonight's episode, Green Day and Oasis, Part 1. The 90s are back and they're here in anime form.
Oh boy.
Oh, yes. Blimey. I've taken my tablet already, and so let's see if I can remember what happens in this. Somebody else start, because I can't.
Well, the boys are getting fucked off, because we have... what's it now? We've been cornered and by this thing by... which one is he again? Chicoletta.
Chicoletta, yes. It's coming back to me now, yeah.
Yeah, you stand Green Day, you know, it's spreading, it's molding over the town if you... If you decrease your altitude, or is it increase? No, it's decrease altitude.
It's decrease because the thing tends to pool in the bottom of it, and since they're literally at the coast, like so at sea level, it'll be at its thickest. But it's getting thicker, so they need to get up. Is basically the way out of it. I think the Narancia's is hiding out in the turtle with Giorno, who's healing him, and Tracia they're trying to protect. Trish is questioning. It's like how she feels about. Bruno, which I'm kind of hoping is more like a fatherly figure kind of thing, because that seems to be the way he is. He's the dad or the mam of the group.
Yeah, he just seems so kind of cold and just all business, like there's no like, empathy or warmth in there at all, and it's just Ranch is like, hey, the boss is Bruno's Bruno, he's fun doing things, and we've been around long enough to know that that's the way he's like, and you're fun saying he doesn't care about stuff, you don't know what you're talking about, sister. I'm going to go have a nap right now, because I got blown to shit 5 minutes ago.
Yeah, and I assume he's just recuperating and taking some new grown parts as well. So yeah, so they have to get higher up. So they head to the stairs. I think it was just the stairs from like the. It's not really like a car park. It's just like a little place down near the coast. I guess like a dock or something like that.
Yeah. They're going up the stairs, but Bruno is being completely just cautious and care. And what I'll go up ahead. You like cover the bottom of the steps, and then we'll see how we go.
I remember now, they didn't see the other guy yet. They like a beer can of one of the drunks, like as he's dissolving, one of his beer cans fell down the stairs. And Bruno's like, oh, it's fine. It's just a beer can. It's just his hand dissolving in this fucking chink. We're fine. Which is just like that's a weird thing to be fine about, but it disappearing. Clank, 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 falls behind pillar, gone.
Yeah, you hear like one clonk, one, two, three. Then one more falls down. This is like clonk, one, two. Then it goes clonk, and then it doesn't go clonk at all. And it's like, wait a minute, something is screwy going on. It's at the bottom of the stairs, he's like, you know, it's missing a step each time.
Mm.
And then, she calls over to Mr. Hey, Mr. Fine, we got to top the stairs, see what's going up there? I'm climbing the stairs, Bruno, but I'm not getting nowhere. I don't get it.
This isn't the first time Araki's done a thing where a guy can't get to the top of the stairs, but... Yeah, it's because the entire staircase is sinking into the ground, which is liquid now?
Well, it's not, because they specifically say it's solid.
He makes solids out of liquids. Is that the... Or sorry, liquids out of solids. Is that kind of the idea behind it?
Well, no, because they still say that... Because later on, when Mr. tries to shoot him, he warns him that it remains hard, so it's just going to bounce off. So it's more like your fella out of My Hero Academia,
it's like phase. It's more like it's phasing through.
Yes, and Senor Pink.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Whereas when the Standard of Seko was actually using Oasis, he's more like he was using it himself. He saw it's like swimming through the ground.
Yeah, I mean, the ground's even, like, it's, like, I think that's just for the user's benefit based off later things, but it appears transparent and he's swimming through it, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So it's probably like he's clearing out the space below the stairs and then having it sink slowly in. Right.
Yeah. Anyways, it's like, shit, if we're going down, I mean, we're going to get attacked by the mole. It's like, this is fucking not going right at all. So we're trying to escape. What happens?
It basically really like tells the pair of them after Sex Pistols like does the shoots it but doesn't help
because it rebounds. The guy instantly blocks it, but Mister counted on that. He was, because it's like the guys are still sitting on the bullets waiting to actually do his plan. I think they shoot like a stop sign or something on the edge of the walk so that it's bent over and they can use that to grab onto and climb up the rest of the way.
Yeah. Actually, we started that demonstrated earlier on as how good Sekou's reactions are, because he comes up to Chicoletta and it's like, hey, getting a good footage? Yeah. What that? You want a treat? You want a treat? It's like, okay, there's the sugar cubes. How many do you want? Two? What? No, three. Yeah. Okay, catch. And, they fly through the air and Sekou's able to kind of rapidly catch him in his teeth. And even as one tends to fall over the edge, spit one that keeps out of his teeth to the feather's back and then catch it again that way. So he's pretty good. He's pretty quick.
Yes. Yeah, because when Sex Pistols bullets come back, he spits rocks at the bullets. So he's got an additional to his stabbed ability, he also has this trained spitting ability, apparently.
He can spit hard things and grab things in his teeth, that kind of thing.
Yes, really quickly.
So did he remind you more of Scooby-Doo wanting a Scooby snack or Muttley wanting a medal?
Muttley wanting a medal, I don't know why.
That's what I thought.
It's probably that.
He's definitely a doggy, the way your man's petting him and everything. that was pretty great. I don't know if you saw it as well. At some point, I think it was during the weekend or something, the subtitles for Fruits Basket was on JoJo's and it changed the context of all the scenes.
Oh, yeah.
That was really funny. I didn't see it myself, but I enjoyed going through people's threads of context changing scenes. And someone's at work surprisingly well, yeah.
Yeah, so after he reflects the bullets, Bucciarati tells the rest of them to get in the car. He'll stay here to deal with this. And he dives off the edge of the parking lot deeper into the mold.
Should be certain death.
It should be.
Well, he's also trying to test whether your man can see where he's swimming, and as it turns out, he can't, because it's just solid dirt to him. I guess he might be using vibrations or something to tell which way they're going, but he can't tell that he was about to... Because he kind of comes out the side of the wall, whereas Bruno's right in front of him, and then, you know, sticky fingers the crap out of him. That sounds horrible. Punches
sticky
him with sticky
right
fingers.
In the eye.
Yeah. Beats him up, basically.
Right in the mouth.
Yeah, and at that point he has to take a break, because he has to ring up the boss and say, something's fucked up, dude. This isn't going to work. which is really funny, him like ringing him while bleeding in a little hole underground. He's like, what are you ringing me for? In the middle of a job, you know this. But it's that the mold isn't showing up on Bruno, so he's like, the mold shows up on, like, living things and not, like, rocks and shit, right? And your man's like, yeah, it kills everything that's living. And he's like, so that dude didn't have mold on him. We might be fucked, dude.
Yes, because they also mention Notorious B.I.G.
Yes.
And they think they're in that sort of situation again where Bucciarati's stand has carried on after he was dead.
Yeah, because they knew that's how that guy worked. So it's like they're basically using what information they do know to try and determine what this guy's deal might be.
Yeah,
which is sensible stand usership, I think.
Yeah, and Jono has noticed that because they're in the back of the car and he escaped. Mister's just like unconscious from his injuries as he recuperates. But Jono is saying, "What the fuck, Bruno? I noticed that before, like, you know, back in Venice when you kind of stubbed you pierced your hand and no blood came out. I thought that was kind of weird, but now your fucking hand is like rotten off there. You got holes in you and you're not bleeding nothing. What the fuck is going on with you?"
And I think at that point, Bruno was kind of like not dozing off at the wheel or anything, but kind of like slightly out of it, when he was talking to him and he kind of has to react. Is that he just straight up says it, or did they work it out between them?
He basically thinks that it's an after effect of Gold Experience fixing him after King Crimson.
Oh, yeah, because Giorno's like, oh, yeah, I can just fix you up again with Gold Experience. That's how it works. And he's like, no, I'm as fixed as I'm ever going to be again.
And he gets him to keep his secret from the rest of the team.
Because they'll only worry.
And then they hear a noise and a corpse lands on the windshield.
That's a pretty horror movie. That's good.
This is as they're approaching Rome. And Chicoletta and Sekou have taken a helicopter to Rome. And they're going to kill everybody in Rome. Yeah. Which I'm like, it's sure like, oh yeah, that's probably where we're going to get Doppio in as like, you know, oh, going to have to deal with him.
The crowd control guy, yeah, yeah. Because it's like, listen, I knew these guys would go like crazy if I let them loose. And killing everyone in Rome is kind of bad. Like, as even Bruno points it out, is like, but the organization has a lot of guys here. That would be really bad for the boss.
Bad for business.
Yeah, if you kill your entire fucking clientele and organization, then yeah, that'd be pretty bad. So the problem is, obviously, you got your swimming guy who dived out of the helicopter. Even your man's like, did he jump out or dive out? Ah, whatever, it's fine. So he's swimming towards him, trying to make him sink into the ground, and your man's still spreading the fungus. So I did like the bit with your man saying, it's like, oh, I can't shoot him from here. It's like, he's too far away. And it's like, don't worry, I'll essentially grab you, and we'll combine our powers, where he shoots like a chimney, and then he grows a tree out of the bullets to grab the helicopter. So they're going to take the helicopter, and Bruno is going to take the swimming man.
Yes, because Seko's jumped out of the helicopter at this point.
Yeah. They're kind of tag teaming and splitting up and that kind of thing, which it's pretty exciting stuff.
Mm. Yeah, yeah, I don't know why I guess he's overly protecting Trish, because I was thinking, like, well, this guy, like, it stays hard, so, like, surely...
Trish's thing seems very useful for this. I mean, like, technically, she could do what he's doing to some extent.
It makes sense to send Bruno, though, because he can just zip the ground open and punch him out of there.
They both have applicable powers, I think. I think the idea with Trish is he feels like Trish is, like, the ace in the whole...
He's trying to protect her still.
Which
is probably where she's being annoyed, is because she feels that he's now being overprotective. Considering she's already proven herself saving everybody's asses from Notorious B.I.G.
That's just Bruno as well. I don't think that's just on her, because obviously he says to Giorno, is like, don't tell anyone that I'm already dead.
Yeah. Well, as well.
He's just overprotective of his gang, yeah.
Yeah, he's probably still smarting a bit from a backheel buying it. He's one of my most trusted, most experienced dudes, and he got by the boss. He can go out, then anybody can go out. So I don't want that to happen to Trish after I said I protect her.
Okay, according to the wiki, Oasis makes solid ground into mud, but as soon as he loses contact with it, it becomes hard again. So he, to make everything sink, he only has to be like towards the bottom to sink it. So he must have been like right. Yes, because that makes sense, because they see him near the surface when he's...
Well, because he was recording them.
Pulling the button.
So he's probably just swimming in circles underneath the staircase to make it sink or something like that.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah, I saw like I didn't see the article, but I just saw the headline as it came into my Google alerts that apparently the thing they worked hardest on was getting the conversation in the car right this episode.
A lot of the action and a lot of the trying to figure out how the other guy's power works, that stuff was all great as usual, but that scene was pretty good, like an emotional kind of thing, and it flowed well.
Yes.
It dramatic sense, like making use of the rear view mirror and all that kind of, everything that's in the car to set the mood a bit.
Yeah, the lighting and everything, sure.
Kind of look great on the inside, not so good on the outside, but it's okay, we're inside the car.
Yeah, the scene is about the characters inside the car, so that's fine. And I thought worked well as well, because it's like, it's the tension of the realization of what the fuck's going on and not so much the horror, but the tragedy of what's happening to the characters we like. And then a fucking body gets dropped in it, and that makes you, whoa, kind of thing. So it works quite well.
The other thing is they've got to try and... The other thing they mention is they need to stop them at this point, because they don't want the mold to get to the Colosseum and kill the guy who they're supposed to be meeting.
Yeah, I mean, it's bad enough that it's going to kill everyone in Rome, potentially, but it's like, also, then the boss will get away, for sure. Yeah.
And then, that is this week's episode of JoJo's Bizarre Adventure taken care of, but what else did we watch this week? It's time for the podcast within a podcast. It's Let's Go! And we start with Dororo, episode 18, The Story of the Cape of No Mercy, in which many people die, and the episode does a really good job at reminding you how dangerous arrows are.
Mm. Yeah, yeah. It's like pretty much you get hit by one, you're fucked.
Yeah, and I like the way
because even your man, he gets pegged by one in the shoulder, but that's pretty much him gone. Like it slows him down to the point
the
where
the guy gets it in the head. As got one.
Oh Jesus! Yeah.
He just got splattered like it was like a magnum bullet.
Yeah, I like the way you don't really see the arrows until something stops them.
Mm.
So
yeah, yeah, they're suddenly just in the thing. It's like a smash cut or something. Mm.
So, yes, we've got Dororo tied to a tree, one dead shark, one shark really mutating. The listener just heard the Toei theme as I was trying to grab another episode title. and we've got Itachi and his gang going off in search of Dororo's father's treasure.
And you have what's the guy's name, the shark boy?
Shiranui.
Shiranui is egging on the shark. Like I think you were right, Niall. It was like I think we guessed as much before. Whereas like the sharks combine each other into like a mutant undead fucking shark. So one shark eats the other shark, and eats enough of the other shark to be like a doubly sized land shark. Yeah, it's pretty gross.
I like the fact that, because I still haven't watched that episode, the first episode with him in, but I like the fact from what I see from this episode is he's kind of like a bit of Hyakkimaru and a bit of Dororo.
Yeah, there's definitely some similarity there.
And instead of traveling with Hyakkimaru, he's traveled with demon sharks.
And like basically they're his family that he's losing. There's a lot of, these people are similar. And I think that comes across as well where, like, I think he even says to Hyakkimaru, is like, what you think killing them is going to fucking do anything kind of thing.
Like, well, is killing to get your body back, what for? Why? Just for the sake of it? Like, asking the same questions.
It fits into the theme of what we've been talking about in recent episodes. But it makes sense from that character's point of view in what's happening in front of him. But I did like also the shark like going straight for Dororo, not like bypassing him or anything, but accidentally chewing through the ropes and the tree rather than chewing through the kid first. That was like, that's how he gets away temporarily. That made sense.
But then Bro is back.
Yay. So that's going to town of the shark.
The shark's pretty good, but he didn't count on fighting this guy. Kind of messes him up. It's a very... Monster Hunter, Shadow of the Colossus thing, climbing all over that fucker.
Stabbing at the hell, getting in the eye. Yeah, all the soft, gooby parts.
Mm. And then you have your man lamenting over. But then they have that kind of nice moment. And I did like Dororo getting embarrassed when Hyakkimaru does the kind of the forehead touch thing that obviously, again, call back to the last episode that this... He now knows that that's a way of interacting with someone you're affectionate with. Yeah.
Mm. It's like, I was fine with Archer. I went through some shit too, but it was all right. It was like trying to be all the tough kid and then going in for the hug, for the embrace still. It's like,
Like him breaking down after, like, you've seen some shit while he was away. You could have fucking died, like, literally just there and several other times, yeah. But just the breakdown after being so strong for so long, yeah, it was nice.
Yeah. And he got that leg back, as I called.
yeah.
It kind of handy because he lost the remaining part of his temporary prosthetic.
The shark did, chew it off.
Mm.
Then they go off looking for Itachi, and meanwhile, Tahomaro, Mutsu, Hyogo, and the men, they've come to kill
his small fucking army. How many guys was that? That must have been like 50 dudes. They had like five or six boats or something. Yeah,
and it's five boats, I think.
They had a good amount anyway. Yeah, like full sail boats.
Probably 30, 40, 50 guys in each boat. So they got like, you know, maybe like over 100 dudes there.
Yeah.
I did wonder where the first time that one shot of as him and his men on the boat coming towards it, because they've seen that shot so many times. I was like, who's done that? Who did that shot first? Because it's always a great go-to shot, which always works. Bunch of men on a boat coming to invade somewhere.
God, yeah. I mean, like, that's got to be such an old trope that a lot of things have done it at this stage.
Yeah, mm. I was just like, who did it first?
Mm.
I'm trying to. When do they run into Itachi?
They run into Itachi
after Itachi after has found the cave.
No, it's after he's got injured. So
I thought they find the cave with the traps in it, and they realize
they found that already. And then it's after the Daigo's army attacks them the first time.
So they meet Itachi not as enemies, but as like we have the same common enemy, the army that's here to murder everyone here. So they kind of, I guess, team up.
They get separated again because Taramaro shows up with his boys to try and fight Yakimaru for the honor of the family. Doro and Itachi go on ahead to find a treasure, trying to solve this whole thing with which the fifth tombstone from the left is like, or the fifth marker from the left is supposed to be like some clue to where the treasure is. Get attacked by archers and we're messing them up, and then simultaneously solve the riddle and then send the tombstones or marble stones rolling downhill to kill all the archers.
And it's like Itachi's men are getting like picked off the entire fucking time. I mean, like, he's just getting more like pincushioned as it goes along.
Because he keeps on blocking the arrows to protect Arave.
It's like the one kind of redeeming thing, even though until the end, he has the obsession with finding the treasure.
He does make the point, is you can come with me, Dororo, we can go somewhere better than this, which is the theme of this entire episode. It's like everybody's motivated by wanting something better than what they've dealt them.
And speaking of, actually, we have our... Shranui has decided, it's like, well, fuck it. If my fucking sharks are both double dead now, I'm going to blow the whole fucking thing up. And he set up a shitload of bombs on top of the mountain and just causes like a landslide for everyone, which is a pretty badass way to go out. But yeah, meantime, we have Hyakkimaru like having a four-way fight, like, but fighting three other guys and also an army.
Yeah, that landslide broke up that fight, so they got to settle it another day. But there was some pretty cool moves going on there.
Your one shooting through the tree was fucking class.
Yeah.
I thought that was a really good move. Like,
Over the course of the fight, Hyakkimaru, he snapped one of his blades.
Your man manages to catch him with one of his big... it's not a hammer. I don't know what the hell you call that.
It's like
a giant,
massive mace type thing.
Club.
Yeah. It's got a two-headed mace. It does have a specific name
because it's in Blooming Romance of Three Kings, Dynasty Warriors games. There's a guy.
It is a kind of weapon. But yeah, he actually manages to connect to Yakimaro's arm sword and that, and smashes it good.
Yeah, and Yakimaro was always like a different vibe with Taramaro from one of the last characters. There's something different about him, and he's just a dead set, dead focused on you gotta kill that Yakimaro. He's just saying, why? Like, why am I gonna do my answer? Because your very existence is a threat to the prosperity and safety of Daigo's domain. So even if you just ran off somewhere and didn't come back again, just you being around would still like be a problem for us. Because we gotta kill you.
Yeah, because each demon he kills makes it worse for the entire land, so...
Yeah.
Yeah, from their point of view.
And, Itachi's other thing is, like, he knows he's not going to make it, but he just wants Dororo to show him the treasure before he dies.
Yeah, he wants to fulfill the thing of finding the treasure, even though he's not going to get to spend it.
Yeah.
There was actually a fair amount there. I wasn't expecting that fucking much.
Well, I wasn't expecting anything because in the comic there isn't anything.
Oh, okay.
In the comic there's a note from the dad saying, I thought Itachi was going to look for it, so I moved it. When you find it, Dororo, give it to the peasants to overthrow the samurai.
They have another, they have one more poignant bit here where there's this mountain of own gold, but Dororo has been told to them, like, so many times, right? There's been that money, you could actually, like, change a lot of people's lives. Like, you could change the whole country, maybe. But, you know, just coming into this, and I still not know, like, what they want to do with it. They could have taken them off somewhere, but they don't. And similar to Hyakkimaru, like, Doro's got some kind of reason to keep on doing what they're doing, even though they could have turned around and run the other way, but they're not going to. But nonetheless, just take a you know, just a few coins for the roll. You know, this is different. No, this is I'm just need a
this
few.
This is
like,
walking around money.
Food,
that's different.
Food
that's fine.
And stuff. You know, come on. I was being cool there.
Itachi does still sacrifice himself in the comic. In the comic, it's the magistrate has come after them because obviously in the comic, Taramara is already dead. And he's basically the landslide. He like grabs a bolt. He's already dying from loads of arrows. So he grabs a boulder and leaps off on top of the magistrate and his men with it. And also, I don't think Tezuka ever gets around to Dorimo finding the treasure. So that's probably also why they had the treasure actually be here in this.
The reveal of it. Okay. I mean, this works quite well. Like it's got a lot of, it's juggling a lot of different things, but because like you said, everyone wants different things, but they all, they're all related in how they want it. And it's the interpersonal connections that they have with that that makes it work and flow really well.
Yes. Yeah.
And the fact that your man, the guy with the big fucking pig fucking sticker, well, not actually, the big heavy hammer thing, he's the only guy who gets injured, and I think he specifically said the last day he won't question his lord anymore. It's like, oh no, what he's doing must be just and everything like that. And he's the one who gets really fucked up from that landslide.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, yeah, just to show you that that's probably not the best decision. You thinking for yourself and then deciding to stop that probably wasn't a good idea, bud.
The other thing in the comic is when he kills the shark, he gets his voice back, to which the reader was probably saying, well, hang on, how was he talking before? Well, he explains, now I no longer have to use the telepathy that I've been using to communicate with you, Tororo.
Jesus, what?
And in later chapters, they still use the telepathy when they're separated.
Jesus, in the comics he sounds OP as fuck.
Getting back his heat vision. Getting back his mutant healing factor.
Yes. I'm not saying that Tezuka hadn't planned it out, but I don't think he planned it out.
What, you think he was making it up as he went along?
But that's part of, that's part of the appeal. It's in the same way that when you read the Kitaro comics, there's clearly ones where Mizuki hadn't got figured out how it was going to end, or he just got bored and just
a good character, and then he didn't know what to do with it.
A tiny panel with text in it wrapping the story up.
Kitaro got better in the hospital.
It's like, you know, it's like, here's a doctor, just say like he grew back some organ inside his body, he grew back his appendix or something like that, and then dude, job done. If you want to do it for a stupid joke.
We'll get to it when we get to this week's Kitaro episode, because the strip is one of the strips is based on, because apparently there's like multiple versions of the strip, which is why
it had multiple revisions, was it?
Yes, yeah, which is why the guy's got two names.
Well, I like how they changed that. Or use that to suit the episode title. But we'll get to that at the very end of the podcast. Next,
we've got One Punch Man, Season 2, Episode 6. That's not the episode title, is it? Is it The Uprising Monsters? It is.
It's possible it had two titles, I think. But I think that was the Crunchyroll one.
I think that's right. I can't remember.
Uprising of the Monsters, that's correct.
That's correct. I'm thinking of what I'm already thinking about this week's episode title. That was the last one I saw. That's why it threw it at me.
Yeah.
To which we actually get more of the the martial arts tournament we promised with last week's episode title.
Rather than an uprising of monsters as this week's episode promises, yes.
Bullshit.
This fucking show, man.
They still have a great deal of difficulty animating Genos in a satisfactory style.
Are they mostly using that CG thing that they have for a lot of stuff? Is that what it is?
I don't know. The thing about this season which bugs me all the way through is it feels like they've already done ran it through an automatic digital cleanup with no QA, because it feels like really thin. The lines have been made really thin as if they've gone through that process.
But like you said, they just ran it through the fucking program, but didn't check it.
Because that's what happens when you like get a crappy remastered cartoon on DVD or Blu-ray. It's like they've absolutely ruined the black lines and messed up the colors.
Mm.
And that's the thing which this feels like is It's like, yeah, it feels like there's not enough strong lines to the drawings. Amongst other flaws. Having said that, story's still great because it's the story straight out of the comic. So,
like, if it wasn't for like some fun comedic performances, and if it wasn't for the story, like, I'd fucking drop this show, man.
And the other thing I'm getting out of it is because I know where the story's going, like probably two seasons down the line, and I can now see stuff being foreshadowed this early on.
Okay.
Like, mainly in this episode, it's Snek's internal monologue of questioning whether there's any need for heroes.
Right, which does kind of tie into him being the, everyone saying he's like, he's the lowest ranking hero. It's like, yeah, but of like A ranks. Come on, guys.
And then
that's pretty high.
The Hero Association planning on pulling all the most powerful heroes from fighting the monsters in the cities to go and look for this one kid because he's the son of an important sponsor.
Yeah, I think the guy like sponsors like 7% of their funding. So, like, I don't know. If they lost that much, that would be a huge amount.
It's a lot for one guy.
Yeah, and, I mean, and, like, from one guy, yeah, 7% would be.
And then he'd persuade his buddies, it was, well, I'm not funding this anymore, and then they'd lose more and more.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But yeah, the fact that they'd move him out when there's a shitload of threat level fucking demons and shit running rampant. Demon is the, yeah, that's the right level.
Yes. But yeah, they quickly go through, I'm trying to think which fights do we get. We get the first fight with Snek gets a decent amount of time because of his monologue, even though we don't see the fight.
Mm.
And
we see your man walk over Lightning Max.
That's it. Yes.
And just it's just kind of his reaction to everything else. We get a lot of his internal monologue as well, I suppose. We get to see God damn it, I've forgotten the guy's name who he's pretending to be.
Taranko.
Yes.
The Taranko versus he's one of the favorites to win. Black Death, something.
Oh yes, because he's going to explain.
He's describing all the things I'm going to do to your body. That was pretty great.
And he touches the wig, and he's like, "Don't touch the head." It's like, oh, it's damn! Like, I knocked him out again before he got a chance to show me these martial arts techniques.
I was looking forward to that, and he's apparently pretty good. The other one we get, and it's my favorite part, it shows Sourface and I've forgotten the wrestler guy's name.
Yeah.
And they're like, I love the way they're both worried when they look at each other in their internal monologue. We don't see the fight, but we see the manly aftermath, and it was just like, and all the crowd's like, oh, that was fucking amazing. And, like, those are my favorite parts of the fight, I'll be honest with you, in general.
The guy Saitama beats had earlier said not to evacuate the stadium because look at all the super strong people we've got here. We can take care of any monsters.
Yeah, this is actually the safest place because if people panic, there'll be like a stampede out and people will get injured. But like, we got the world's foremost martial artists here, which like are rank, and some of them are actual like high ranking superheroes and other ones are the equivalent of. So yeah, we can take care of it. This is the safest place they could be, basically, is his opinion.
But Genos goes out and takes care of them up until somebody takes him out unseen after he's finished fighting a cockroach man.
What's the deal with Saitama keeping having to go to the bathroom in this episode? I knew for comedy effect, but what the fuck is he eating? Like, that he keeps having to go.
I like the fact that he came back and he'd forgotten how to tie off his Obi. He's like, not ignoring him and busy trying to go, like, okay, that'll do.
Yeah, and your man's giving him this whole speech of, it's like, I only destroy martial artists. I'm not actually a bad guy. I only destroy martial artists who don't, like, respect everything. And he's just there fiddling with his belt the whole time. He's like, oh, I'm going to fucking kill this guy. It's pretty great. The writing is fucking great. Like, yeah.
I think as well, just him going to the toilet all the time, it's just like, oh, this is like a spectacle of, like, martial arts, like, prowess going out in front of me. He's going to the toilet every 5 minutes. I don't care if I miss it. It's fine. It's very martial arts.
Yeah, he's just going on his phone or whatever.
Does not care. Doesn't really give a crap about what's going on.
He's supposed to sit in the sidelines and watch other people. That's how this works. Because we get, like, a rundown of all the other wins and losses. I think, was it Barry? Barry won?
Dave. Yeah, he just hit Lance, exploded on him in one shot, just sat on him, and that was it. There was another guy who had to be stopped from killing his opponent.
He's too extreme.
We also learned that Suryu has gotten so powerful so he doesn't have to bother with anything. That's his motivation for why he's become so powerful.
That's why he also hadn't been in the last 3 years, because he was kind of like, I'm just going to skive off. I've trained like once, like a couple of years ago. Yeah. Like the opposite motivation of Saitama, I guess.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's more like Frieza.
Yeah. It's got a bit of that going as well.
Yeah.
And he's like questioning Snake. He's like, what's the point of heroes if there's people more powerful who aren't even bothering to be heroes?
Yeah, if there's this whole martial arts thing and heroes are only trying it out, like in Snake's case, he thinks that if he can beat this guy, that guy beat a guy a higher rank than me, therefore that'll affect my ranking, that kind of thing.
Yes.
So like all the heroes are just trying to, you know, improve themselves, or, I mean, like, Lightning Max seemingly is a martial artist in his own right, but like they all have their own like personal reasons for doing it, and some people are so powerful, but yet, like you say,
Snake's lost confidence after he met the Sea King.
And he mentions is like, oh, I gotta fucking get stronger for that reason, and also some random motherfucker just beat the shit out of me once. I don't even know who that fucking guy was. Good stuff.
We also get Fubuki carrying on fighting the S&M monster.
Oh yeah, all her organization have been turned against her. But as soon as she takes a couple of hits, she's like, "Ah, crap! That means my sister's going to show up."
Yes, because
it's both you're fucked now, but also bollocks.
Yes, because the S&M monster thinks that she can take her hostage and force. The terrible tornado to show up, and she's like, oh no, she's going to be coming anyway, because she detects whenever I get injured.
And, she kind of gets mussed up by that thing. Also, all her organization get mussed up, even though she said, they're friendly. It's like, yeah, but they were mind controlled. It's totally okay.
Well, no, she says that wasn't an attack, throwing them into the side of a building.
Yeah, I don't know. Legally, I think that's an attack.
Yes, she's generally horrible. I like the fact that, like, she kicks she throws, like, a head of one of the defeated enemy monsters. And it's still talking to warn the other monster that apparently she's killed every other monster in the city.
It has just enough vital organs attached to it to give a last warning before it dies. Yeah.
Yeah, so we kind of get the full view of their twisted relationship here.
Mm-hmm.
And that'll be carrying on for quite some time. I'm trying to think where we know the Metal Bat has been rendered unconscious, they think, by monsters, but of course we know it's his sister.
They've captured Metal Knight.
They found Metal Knight's body, like, hung up somewhere.
Okay.
Destroyed.
I thought it was the villains.
Remember, he operates it by remote control, so...
Yeah. So, I mean, like, his robot has been taken out of commission, but, yeah, presumably he's still around.
And we see Genos has been smashed
in. What did he get taken up by?
I don't think we see.
Because obviously he beats the Cockroach Man with his anti-ninja technique.
And then he senses something behind him. Is it possibly the guy who's heading towards the... The martial arts tournament.
Oh, yeah.
It could be. I don't think we see what takes them out, yeah.
But we do see that, I can't remember the guy's name, is heading towards, has been sent by,
the eyeball man?
Yes.
Gyoro, I think it is.
Yeah. Because apparently everything's going... They've lost a few people, but they feel like the Monster Association is doing a bang-up job.
Oh, and we do get the after-the-credits thing of revealing the mastermind behind the whole thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
The, what's he called? Like Demon King or something?
It's like Orochi.
Demon King Orochi.
Yes, that's it. Yeah.
He's a gross monster who's made out of monsters. He looks just... a capsule, like... death metal album cover, skulls upon skulls upon fangs upon talons upon gross
exposed
stuff.
Flesh. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Right. I think that's everything from that. So it's still the vague disappointment. Does it?
Yeah, I'm enjoying the writing, but not much else about the look of it.
The theme song is always rousing every week.
I feel like the theme song doesn't get me as much as the original one did. That's just as me though.
It's still a good jam project tune though, yeah. Which, as I said, would be at least one positive factor you're going to get out of this experience.
There we got Karakuri Circus, episode 30. Is it Pieta?
Yeah.
So this has the scene which is sums up everything wrong with this adaptation.
Which specific scene?
Oh, no, everything else apart from that scene I think is fine. It's the fact that... So, what happened to Masaru? Well, luckily he was found by a character from earlier in the manga who we have never met up until this point in the series.
Okay, because I was like, who's this random woman? It's like, oh, she was saved up by Narumi. I was like, when? I was like, in a scene you didn't fucking see. No. And I was like, all right, cool.
Still pulling this at this stage.
Well, not,
but the thing is, they can't fucking not, man. They've written themselves like so much shit where it's like, and then there's this character who we need to have in the story, but we haven't introduced.
It's even worse than you think. Because the scene she appears in is the scene which explains so much of how everything works.
That's one specifically explains how the series. Blood works. Yeah, you're right. Also, I mean, like, that's specifically how she's not affected by the nanomachines is because she drank some of Narumi's blood because she was injured and he gave her some blood and now she's immune. And that would have explained it way back when. Yeah, fucking hell, you're right.
Yeah.
Oh. Right, okay.
Yeah, cool. And also I don't know how they would have run into her going from China to the Sahara Desert because that is the only time in the anime they could have run into her. Even though she's in France.
Yeah. It only works in a longer adaptation, I guess. Fucking hell.
They caught her on like a
school tour.
A long city break. She was away somewhere in, I don't know, Cairo.
It was a school tour to China or the Sahara. Fuck it. One or the other. They could have done it. There's so many fucking ways they could have made this show work.
That being said, rest of the episode, fine.
It's mostly focusing on Gi and everything, so that works better.
Everything else works. So basically, Narumi is being an absolute dick.
Like, he's trying to put on the smiley, happy, jokey face with, what's her name? The other martial artist.
Yes, Mingxia.
Mingxia, I couldn't think of her name, thank you. But, I mean, like, she's trying to say, it's like, Shirogane is actually, she's okay. Like, I could tell you that she's actually sacrificed a lot for us, and he's like, no, don't worry about her, I'll fucking kill her.
Yes, because even though they prove that she's not evil, he still blames her.
That's fucking victim blaming, man.
It is, I feel like that's the point, because...
That he's in the wrong, sure.
There's similar points they've made with Faceless of, like, absolutely vile male behaviour. It's just weird to see it shoved onto the shoulders of a guy who's supposed to be the hero. But at no point is he coming across as the hero in this episode. He's coming across as
a real piece of shit.
Yes.
And, I mean, like, even with Gi, who's basically just testing him to see if he'll make a suitable husband for her. And it's kind of like he doesn't really fucking live up to it in this episode.
I think the idea is that Gi could tell that he's not going to do this. No matter what he's saying is.
Yeah, he's saying like all the like, I'll fucking kill her. Don't worry about it. But he's not that kind of guy. Gi's seeing past it. But like as the audience, I'm not fucking seeing past it right now.
No, I think partly because
he's more confident in him than I do.
Yeah, maybe just he's a better actor than he's got.
Or maybe it needs better writing. I don't fucking know.
I don't know either. So basically the circus people, and Eleonore and Narumi are on the train with the space shuttle heading on the Trans-Siberian Express to the last remaining space station so they can blast off into space. Masaru has been picked up by, this French teacher. And then he heads back to, Pierre Lefou's base. Yes. Hoping to meet up with everybody, but they've already gone. Everyone else has taken off in, helicopters. And Guy has remained there to give them time to get away because he already knows he's dying.
Yeah, he had a fight with Narumi where he was like, okay, because you said you're going to hurt Eleonore and I'm going to fight you. And he fights him up to a point where he's like, he ripped my shirt. I'm fucking done. And it's clear like at that stage because his shirt is ripped and he's crystallizing underneath it. And he's kind of like, yeah, I knew I'm not going to be able to beat you. So I might as well just sit here at the platform and wait for the puppets to come.
It's also because once Narumi sees that he's dying, then Narumi starts fighting. Yes. And he's like, oh, so you're surrendering then. Okay, I win. You don't get killed. Don't get to kill Eleonore.
Yeah, he did stipulate like if I win, you can't kill her.
I think it's like the fact that he because he didn't carry on fighting after he saw Guy state.
Yeah,
that he
yeah.
knows ultimately that Narumi's is kind at heart.
Mm.
Then Masaru shows up where Guy's about to die for the first time. He's trying to drag all the puppets who are attacking down this tunnel.
Like 1,000 puppets or something like that?
Yes.
He keeps saying, like, I got a switch, and like, you know, he's got some explosive or something, so he's waiting until they're all inside the tunnels to explode them.
So it's the captain, the one who thinks he's humans in charge of this lot. He hasn't got the message. He still thinks that when he sees Masaru, he's like, shouldn't you be in space with faceless?
Shouldn't you be faceless, downloaded into your body, and be in space? I wasn't picking up on that. And also, I feel like that would have been a really good guy to play off Guy, like, you know, the guy who thinks he has this great lineage and the guy.
Oh yeah, I'm sure there's more stuff in the comic between them that there is.
Yeah, this. Yeah.
It's like we also
it's
see.
A bit wasted here.
Is it Camera Jimmy? I don't think he may not even get a name. Who's in the series a lot more? Not sure if he showed up before this episode.
Okay. I don't remember him.
He's kind of like a non-combat automaton who kind of shows up to... I think maybe... I can't remember if he's heading after the train, maybe. I'm sure he does come up more in the story later on. Mm. But I'm sure he's been in it right from the Midnight Circus.
Like as a background thing.
Yeah.
Something.
Mm. Masaru flies away. We get a nice speech about how Masaru drives the circus to perform better because of his eyes. He's like the perfect audience for them, which drives them to do their best.
Because Guy was like kind of getting his ass handed to him, and he was just like, I just need to draw in a few more. But when Masaru shows up, he's kind of like got renewed vigor. He's the perfect audience, basically. For people to perform at their best. Yeah.
So he blows them all up, and then in a remarkable bit of dying puppetry, he is... What's the thing he's... Pieta pose with him in the arms of his puppet, who we now learn is that the face of the puppet he
is
made...
Is the death mask of his mother?
That's it, yes. So finally, his mother will be able to hold him.
As he dies.
Gosh.
Yeah, it's pretty fucking laying on the...
It works, though. It works.
It sounds cheesy as it fucking sounds, but it works better than it sounds.
Yes.
I guess. Yeah.
I think with the music and the animation...
the shot looks great and everything.
Yeah, it's just that one scene with that woman, because they had to get from A to B, and they'd forgotten they hadn't actually brought her in.
Or established how Masaru is going to get back to them.
Yes.
Yeah. I feel like you could have wrote, like, a different scene in or something, you know?
Yeah.
But there's so many things you could have done differently. It's like, oh, I guess we have to include her now all of a fucking sudden and refer to that time she met Narumi, even though when could that possibly have happened?
Yeah, I think we're good unless somehow they have to write in all the people from the village we never met from the four.
They probably fucking will, dude. That's how this show seems to be.
I think we're good now. I think we're good because there's not many episodes left.
Okay, fair enough.
So I assume we'll be get the train attacked next.
Hmm.
And we'll see how they get along without a bunch of circus people who were in the comic who never appeared.
Like, to show the skills of these characters who we don't really know that well.
I think it'll be fine. I think it'll make everything fit in.
Okay.
I think we'll be good.
Oh, the other one is the knife thrower is apparently engaged to the assassin guy, even though I thought she was a lesbian, so that's weird. You can be bi.
Yes, you could be bi.
It's true, but she seemed really into
Eleanor Ray for that one episode. Yeah. And then,
again, I assume that was like the main thing in the comic, but maybe it was just like a one-off thing in the comic.
I think there's more in the comic, but they skipped over so much that.
Fucking, yeah, they've had some sort of whirlwind romance that he kind of proposes to her by giving her a packet of cigarettes. It's a multi-pack. fucking hell. It's a weird show, man.
Talking of weird, Wacky Na 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 TV second season. The first season is now up as well. Episode 6.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. Let's go back to it.
Salvation. Meeting someone in showbiz. In which they leave... One guy falls down a pit, he's left hanging, and he meets a mouse who asks if he's from show business, and he explains.
Hey, that mouse was Banksy, I'll have you know.
Yes, that's what I thought as well.
That's why you can't find Banksy, because they're actually a mouse, not a human being.
And the mouse will save him if he tells him a joke. And
like the conversation was like, really, you save people for jokes? And he's like, yeah, totally, all the time.
I've done it all the time. and he's like, well, I don't really know any, because you're in show business. Just tell me a joke from somebody you've seen on a TV show you've worked on.
And all the jokes he knows are just like, have you ever seen like just relatable fucking shit?
What is the deal with opening your fridge and there's no food in there?
That's it.
Yeah,
they're just like the
observation part of observation humor, and then no joke
the humor.
Part.
There's no, like, performance to the observation that makes it funny. Yeah.
Like, what is the deal? Did I forget to buy groceries again? I don't know what's going on.
I really actually enjoyed his bits, like, because the dialogue, again, it's really good, like, back-and-forth banter that I feel like has to be nearly ad-libbed. It's so natural. he was pretty funny in that, yeah.
I cannot remember how it ended, though.
He bites through the rope and he falls down.
Excellent. Right, that's solid. Then we've got Sarah Zanmai, episode 6. I want to connect, so I'm not giving up. In which the format of the show is completely out the window.
To the point where when it gets back on format, it happens so fucking whiplash quick. I was like, whoa, wait, what?
Well, by the way, that monster from last week, still there, still on the bridge, sucking up whatever it was.
Well, they didn't stop him, so I guess,
And then just blew up. It's, oh no, I forgot.
That was what killed him in the end. Like, it's like, I'm an unknown zombie or something like that. Like, cause we didn't really find out what his deal was.
No, it was like, it was one from last week that they didn't defeat.
Yeah, but what I mean is when he became a Kappa zombie ghost, he said, like, I was an unknown zombie or something like that. It's like, we didn't really resolve his thing. We didn't go into his head as to his whole deal.
Oh,
no,
right.
Way.
Okay.
Yeah. Because they didn't have time at that stage. They had so much other stuff to get through.
Yeah, because the boys are Kappas, and Kazuki is in denial about it. It's like, this is fine. I love cucumbers. Just being a Kappa was great.
We're invisible. We can sneak into theme barracks. but there's too many reminders around, and even the distraction of a football doesn't quite do it.
Yeah, and... Enter having a quick fantasy about that. He's having to pass the ball to him at last.
Oh, they try sumo wrestling as well.
Oh god, that was creepy because of that fucking kid, man. don't make it weird, guy. I get you like him, but like, it's just, I don't know.
Yeah, and also like the back of like the sumo wrestling. I don't know what you call that.
I forgot the name of it. Yeah,
This kind of, it's just, a bit off, like, with a little kind of cap out here, so this kind of stretch to one side, it's just, it's an uncomfortable level of definition there.
Well, if you're uncomfortable with crotch-related stuff, this isn't the show for you.
I've gotten used to certain kinds of it, but, of downstairs antics, but now it's kind of a whole different set.
Fair enough.
Meanwhile, Rio, the policeman, runs into Haruka, and they're
that scene was creepy.
Confiding each other about how someone in their lives
it's being distant to see them, they're far away, they aren't themselves.
They can't
anymore.
Make that connection. Yeah.
Yes.
And I did like the scene initially where, like, Haruka's just sitting there and then the dad's reading, I think reading a book or on his phone. I thought maybe on his phone, but he's probably just reading a book. But then when it kind of cuts back to him, he's like collapsed on the fucking table. And I was like, oh my God, what did you do? Because this motherfucker is dangerous. And he did basically pull a gun on a kid in this episode.
Yes.
Some kind of magic gun.
It's still a gun. It's like the bullet clicks into place and everything. It's not good.
Blows your desire, but not even buddy.
Yeah, and he wants to test and see if Haruka's thing is a...
love or desire.
I guess a selfish... Yes. Is it a selfish desire or is it...
what do you call it?
Yes, sincere love, or like that thing counts as something different and therefore it doesn't get classified the same. But apparently what they do with someone like that is they just put them in the shredder, so not much better.
We can't have anybody who is proving our point wrong and be allowed to exist, so we have to toss them in the shredder. Gotta be taken care of.
Hmm.
And so the Kappas and Kepi have to sneak into the Otter Kingdom in order to recover him.
Oh yeah, we get the secret history of the Kappa Otter War, I guess.
Yes.
at least from a single Kappa's point of view.
A probably like remarkably questionable point of view. Yeah.
In a variety of
particularly if he's the person
of all cultures.
Particularly if Kepi is the person after the credits. And also quickly he offers the plan to Kazuki of why don't you pull out your Shurikendama?
Yes.
And insert it in your brother.
I feel like there's a certain level of manipulation going on here. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
As well, he's kind of praying on it as well. It's like, if your Shurikendama is removed, then you're out of the circle of connection, so you don't exist, you're not going to exist, and you never have existed.
The circle that is you as a chain link is removed from the chain link while the chain continues without you. Is how they visualize it,
As we've seen, but they have only, as let them realize now, when the Kappa zombies are destroyed, then they're wiped from existence as well.
Yeah, and it's the boys realizing that as well, and it's like, that's kind of fucked up.
Yeah, and it's like preying a bit on Kazuki's intense desire to martyr himself, just to completely one way of saying, oh, if I was out of existence forever, that would mean I wouldn't have made Haruka run at me in traffic and he wouldn't have got hit by that car, so maybe it's for the best that I do this. And
it's the fact that Kepi seems to be going to use the equipment which is in this Otter Kingdom's Shurikendama processing plant to do it. So you could like transforms it into something else in order to...
Like a similar device, but that does something different. Yeah.
But the other two boys stop him from doing this. And it turns out, yes, Haruka gets rejected because they run after it, they fail to save it. The box, it falls in, but then it's rejected.
The Kappa-Amazon box.
Yes.
Is it Kappa-Amazon?
Yes.
Or a Kappa-Zon?
And it goes goes to the shredder, and then they use Kepi as a... Well, Kepi feels like it's going to be a struggle for them to use him as a football after he turns himself into a football, but so he grabs him before he can finish his sentence.
I know it's going to be hard for you to kick me as hard as you... Ah, Jesus!
Please, my bones. They're so fragile.
Yeah, I mean, like, even though he transformed several times in the episode, he looks pretty fucked up after. They did kick him pretty hard 3 times.
He's looking bad even when he turns into a parachute to safely dangle Haruka down to safety. At the end, he's just completely trussed up, broken limbs, eye swelling over his lid.
then we quickly get the defeat of last week's... we also get like the flashbacks of why Haruka's got the scent thing is because he got it from Kazuki's mother, because they've met and was reassured that she wasn't trying to steal Kazuki away from him.
Hmm.
Yeah, again, it's again in the theme of it. She was just trying to make a connection. She thought she'd lost access to that kind of thing.
And mm-hmm. and then yes, the cops are like, oh, they're bothered, but then they've caught on their security cameras Kepi, who apparently yeah. they've been looking for.
Yeah, so this is still a win for them, essentially. And is that the after credits thing? We see them in the falling Kappa kingdom, I guess. Not the yes. falling Otter kingdom, because it's the Otter invasion.
Yeah, where is it? Do they call him a prince? The guy in the white suit?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, and something dark flies out of him and into Mabu. And so that suggests what's caused Mabu's coldness.
Yeah.
So obviously something's going on there. But I like the fact that so much is explained, and also we kind of get some resolution to Kazuki's arc so far. So I guess we can start picking up Toei's and Enters over the remaining episodes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But it also, like, reveals a bunch. Like, it answers a bunch, but also by, like, making you go, wait, so if that's Kepi, then what? You know, it makes you ask more questions as well. With yes. new information.
And still, like, dangling as well a little bit for Kazuki that, his biological mother is still out there, and that's something we can tug on later on if it comes up, because presumably Kazuki may want to reciprocate that connection that she was trying to make, but now he's come to terms better with this.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Continues to be a really good show. Then we've got, once I find my list again, Fruits Basket Episode 7, Spring Comes.
Spring Comes. Oh, yeah, that one.
I forgot the doctor's name already.
Hattori.
I think I remember that.
Toru has to go over there, and she has her appointment with Dr. Hattori, which... she thinks she's been warned that before, like, he's the dude who will hypnotize you to forget about the Somas if you discover a secret. And she's kind of worried there's going to be something to do with that. But she's met a door by Momiji, the beautiful German-Japanese boy, and she's escorted around the grounds and explained how what's going on here. There's like kind of like an inner circle of like very top closest family members, and then we have sort of surrounding that. The cousins and then associated people who work with them or for them, and they all live in this one big estate together. Like one big happy family.
So the inner family are all the Zodiac.
Zodiac members and probably any siblings or like parents or anything like that.
I assume this isn't that unusual, if maybe old fashioned in Japan, but it looks very cult-like, I gotta say.
They're just a really close family, Dwayne.
It's a really big, really close family. That has a lot of secrets, and it's like, yeah, I don't know. It seems a bit. I think it maybe it's just the threatening vibe I was getting off the man at the start, which was intentional, obviously.
Mm.
But it's as the episode kind of goes on, you realize it's not so much that he's the threatening thing about it. It's other parts of the family, and that he has suffered tragedy as well. Everyone is tragedy.
Yeah, he's kind of come to reassure her that, like, yeah.
I think he's asking for her intentions and everything as well.
It's over a week ago, yeah. Kind of see she's on level 2.
Yeah.
What's it? And it's fast. I don't know. Yeah, it's kind of like a worry of what her character is like, because he's thinking back to one of the more awful times he had to hypnotize somebody, which is involved, a lost love of his, who, she was it Hannah or Kanna? I want to say Hannah. Like a long, long ago, she was like one of the, people who worked on the estate, and she was
the servant cast, and she accidentally, she fell for him, all right, but she also found out his secret. The dog guy does show up to kind of tease at what that might be, but doesn't give it away. So she found out a secret, and he kind of fell for her because she's, you know, a decent person. And
she was nice. Accepting and so warm and not judgmental about it at all. And of course was like, this is, I'll keep your secret because you mean a lot to me. And they had a lovely 2 months together before they decided, we're going to approach Akito, the head of the family, to see if we could get hitched, ask for your blessing.
That seemed quick, but they did say he was working with her for a while before that, so I presume they had a relationship of a friendly kind before that, that kind of way.
Yeah. And Akito flips out, just throws an absolute fucking rager up her face, starts like one slapping people and throwing it around, knocks Hattori into a mirror, which cuts his eye, and he's consequently like blind or going blind in that left eye.
I think he's practically blind in that eye or something like that. So I'm guessing it's basically like a glass eye where you can detect like light, but that's about as much of it.
Yeah. And like Hannah, this poor girl is tormented by this. She can't bear to see that Hattori go through all this just over someone like her, because Akira was not going to do it. Okay, we're never allowed to be together anyway.
And she develops like a complex about it, and she's obsessing about it, and it's making her physically ill as well as mentally ill.
Yeah.
So Hattori is convinced to, by the same fucking lunatic, to wipe her memory so that she doesn't have to suffer like this.
Yeah. But also, you know, it's going to wipe memory of any time they spent together, no matter how loving and how special that was. That's all going to be gone as well. And
Yeah.
But she agrees. No, she doesn't want to see him go through this pain. Doesn't want to go through any of this. And if maybe it's for the best, if this can't be, then we may as well try and move past it or try and forget about it. And
yeah, but I mean, she's very self-blaming at that stage. She's not really thinking fully through, because like when you see later on, like, that she's still living in that tiny little town, and he just has to kind of put up with it. That sucks, man. It's based off of his relationship with her that he felt like he needed to be cold and everything like that. And it's true, his lost love that he learned. What was her like little thing? It's like, what happens when the snow melts? And he's like, you get water. And he's like, nope, spring comes after the snow melts. So he has this thing of, I'll just be cold and I'll just die alone in the cold kind of thing. And he sees these exact same qualities in his former fiance that he saw that he sees in Toru now.
Yeah.
Not that he fancies Toru. It's just like, oh, you're actually like a really decent fucking person as well. So obviously that means she meets his approval. But it's also kind of like the tragedy of him having to live out seeing someone else like her and then literally fucking seeing her walk down the road kind of thing.
But most importantly, he sees her with a gaggle of her friends, and they're walking by and discussing, oh, here you're getting hitched, oh, yeah, I'm getting hitched. Oh, he's a really kind of great, cool guy. And basically describing Hattori again.
I think she literally says something like, he's not as handsome as Hattori, but, you know, whatever.
Yeah. But oh, Hattori, but, it was okay. I got over that guy and went somewhere else now. And then he said, well, she is getting on just fine.
He's happy to see that she's not suffering anymore, but obviously he's still suffering a little bit. But Toru reminded him of that, well, like after the snow melts, you still get spring, so that there's still a chance for him kind of thing.
Yeah. Just drawing all those parallels, like the old Toru and Hannah, they reacted the exact same way when they see Hattori transformation into he is the mighty dragon, which in our realm of gotta be actual animals, equates to a seahorse or the seaweedy dragon kind of thing. So
I did like the fact they say seahorse and sea dragon. I'm pretty sure he was the dragon, because it's like, what else is going to be the fucking dragon? I guess a Komodo dragon or something. But anyway,
no, it's this dragon. Yeah. And it's, oh, sky, cool, collected doctor is so imposing and intimidating. He said, you're the dragon. He's this tiny little cute seahorse. And it's like, and they both react the same way. Oh my God, a seahorse. It's kind of cute though.
Is he saltwater or freshwater?
Freshwater, saltwater. Hurry, people.
It's pretty nice. So it kind of resolves well with Toru, and he sees her off, and he gives her a camera. He goes like, yeah, that was the deal, right? I said, if you come over, like, I'll fulfill my end of the deal and give you the camera for taking pictures at the school festival. But then Toru replaying it, it's like, you know what'll happen if you don't come. And it's kind of like, I won't give you a loan on my camera kind of thing. It's just like everything he says sounds like a fucking threat.
And Shugure explains, as context matters a lot, you know, and Toma does he says one thing, but he means it this way.
It's going to sound like a threat of bodily harm, but he's actually quite nice.
It's also one of my BFFs. there's another guy who completes the gang, kind of maybe in that trio, but you know, he's just an absolute fucking goof like the rest of us in it, so like, don't mind him. He's just, he doesn't realize what he's doing, he doesn't know what he's doing.
Yeah, and so as Toru's leaving the compound, she gets a glimpse of some sinister person in a car, like, I don't know, doing laps around the place. No. I presume trying to get a glimpse of Toru, but without saying as much. Yeah.
This was what year is it out here? just taking the car out. I know, like, Shigure is a dog, but it reminded me, oh, like, Rich Dog. It just reminded me of, like, this, that meme of, like, Rich Dog. It's like, Johnson, fetch me the limousine. I wanted to go for a drive so I can go back inside again.
Yeah, another good episode, another load of fucking tragedy and shit. Again, I really like how the pacing is and everything in the show. It works quite well.
Yeah. It's dubbing up some more of the kind of sinister angles because Toru's heard it like multiple times though. They refer to the transmission as the curse, precisely. And for us, what exactly is this curse all about? Can it be undone? Can it ever happen? And then Shigeru's kind of saying, it's this stuff you're going to find out later on in the season. I mean, when you're ready for it. I'll leave it out there for now. But I promise that when you're ready, we might talk about it sometime.
So they've left that hanging, but like, yeah, interesting stuff.
Yeah, it's a nice, again, pleasant adaptation. I would call this like these chapters being much shorter in the comic, but maybe they were longer than I remember. Or they just did a decent enough job of managing to spin the whole thing into an episode.
Yeah.
Well, more like expanded into the episode. I'm not taking that long at all. The comic, but it's good, and that's important to have in a series like this, which is one of the last scenes people kind of talking to each other and discussing deep feelings and past traumas, and to keep people kind of moving along like that is really important. And I'm doing a good job here of doing that very thing. So yeah, keep on chugging along. It's always like a pleasant watch, and as I keep saying, reminds me of that I enjoyed the story a lot more than I remembered. I just seeing it again.
I've kind of forgotten like all the story, but I remembered enjoying what I read. I'm not sure how far I've been read up to in it, so everything's like new to me. But I was like, oh yeah, this was pretty good, and it's coming through like that. But speaking of past family trauma. That does bring us on to our next episode, I think.
People turning into animals as well.
Yep, that's true as well. Fuck, a lot of related things.
Yes, Bungo Stray Dog, Season 3, Episode 31, Hiru Isu. I think there's another R in there, actually.
Hiru Isu, yes. I looked up, it's like lesser squirrel. I'm trying to walk back what that meaning might have pertained to in an episode, but anyways.
And Portrait of a Fowl.
Yeah, both similarly themed, I think.
Yeah, I think the first half's the longer one, isn't it, on this episode?
It is, yeah. It's got a bit of like levity in there as well, as you aren't like hit twice by two separate cake layers of tragedy.
The first one is it Kyoka?
Kyoka is the girl with the demon snow. Yeah.
Yes.
Demon snow is trying to get them extra soy sauce, which was kind of great.
It's more like she doesn't entirely trust it because...
Like
my stand killed my family. So I don't know, I just use it kind of frivolously for things like getting me soy sauce. It's just always going to be the thing. It'll be a tool if I need it, but nothing more.
Yeah, and for a thing with no facial expressions, it does seem very worried that about her going to kill it.
Yeah, they're having lunch in the cafe, and Atchushi is there, and then also Lucy Mom Montgomery is there to Atchushi. Remember, I'm here to get revenge on you. Revenge for what?
If you don't remember,
I'm not going to tell you.
I fucking hate that, but at least they do get to that. Yeah, I hate that kind of trope. I suppose that's the way to put it.
Meanwhile, here's a document. Here's a package for you.
Yeah, it's like all the stuff just laid out for you, but they do. One has withheld some key information because fuck that guy.
Yes,
just to kind of prank him. This is my revenge, my deadly revenge. So you got to go retrieve some documents or a case from a boat down on the docks. But the page left out is we have no information about what the boat is or where it is.
You have to check every fucking boat.
You got to search every boat and get chased out by people thinking we're a home invader, as would a natural normal person do.
Mm.
And then she comes down to gloat. Like, how's my revenge going? This is your revenge, yes. My diabolical plan. I withheld a page from the case file so you would be down here and be completely confused and get into a number of embarrassing scripts.
When she threw it into the water and your man got caught in like old anchors and shit, I thought that earlier scene where it said no swimming in the docks was just like a weird, like they felt like translating that, but it was foreshadowing. Which is kind of great. So she has to jump in and take him into, I've forgotten the name of the room.
Anne's room.
Anne's room. And Anne of Abyssal Red, not Anne of Green Gables.
Yeah. in order to take him out of the water and stop him drowning. And also resolve, you know, her whole fucking dealio, I guess.
She's mad at him because at the end of season two, as she was escaping, she helped him get out free from inside a Moby Dick. And before he jumped out, he said, "Remember, you're going to come back and save me from this guild, right?" And said, "Yeah, totally promise." But then he didn't, and she took it really hard because she thought he broke his promise.
But from his point of view, it's like her body didn't show up in the Moby Dick wreckage. So he was like, "Oh, thank fuck, she got out of there. Okay."
Yeah. But she waited and it didn't turn up, and then like she had to go off on her own ends. She was just like on her own for a while and had to get this job at the cafe to make ends meet. And everyone was saying, "Dude, we're fucking on space whale crash into the city. It was fucking crazy. Like, how am I supposed to find you and all that?" I went and looked genuinely, but it's absolutely mad. It's a complete, like, honest, like misunderstanding.
She's now annoyed that she's wet because she had to leap in the water to rescue him.
He's got a brilliant idea on how maybe her stand power works. If you teleport us back to the real world and teleport us back to your room, but without the moisture on us, then it'll be fine. And I was like, well, I can see where this is coming a mile
this
away.
This won't lead to any kind of
new shenanigans.
Comic moment, will it? Of course not. No, we'll do this.
No sort of awkwardness between these two characters who are clearly attracted to each other.
whoa.
But when your one finds him, like, floating in the fucking dock with his arse sticking out of the water, like, not knowing what the fuck just happened, that was a good funny scene.
Nonetheless, they find the boat and the documents contained within, and it happens to be the case file, which pertained to Kyoka's parents' debts, which has now been, which should be under lock and key at City Hall or at Ainsley, whatever like that. But earlier on in the day, a transport containing documents was attacked by a lone assailant who was very powerful and very strong and managed to make out there. What did they get? They got one document, just one thing, pertaining
to... It's weird, they only took the one thing, yeah.
Yeah, and it's in front of them right now. And it lays out the actual events about surrounding Kyoka's parents' deaths, because she was thinking that her ability went wild and killed them.
Well, actually, so her dad was a super spy or something, was it?
Yeah, a super spy. Working for the government now. And
her man was a I was going to say a stand user. I keep saying it. Her man was an ability user.
Yes. She had the Demon Snow ability.
Yes.
Anyways,
which made them a great dream team for when ninjas invaded their house.
It was just so cool. It was like these guys are breaking into the house and just so casually, going, "This is my dad. He's super cool, like spy man. Just blows this guy away." And then my mom is even better. She's got a cool, like samurai lady. She's gonna cut people up with a ghost sword. But amongst these intruders was a guy who had a power that allowed them to transfer mind control by basically blood spattering on you.
I think they all were. All of them were attacked. They all had the one red eye.
Because my impression was that whoever's ability it was isn't actually in that room, and that's a plot line down the line.
So, basically the person who really killed her parents is still out there, and you know what his ability looks like and how it works, that kind of way. Yeah.
So that gets got, and
his dad gets
possessed, and then he's pointing his gun out at Kyoka, bouncing the ball outside in the garden, and it's like, "Honey, you gotta kill me before I kill our child outside there," and he gets cut down. But then his blood spatters on her, and now she's just mind-controlled.
And so she gives like one final command to Demon Sword, like protect my kid.
Yes.
And to do that, like obviously cuts her mother down. She sees this and then she carries it, but like she gets that I've heard of like abilities been passed down to the same bloodline, but hers is less because it works through her phone or something like that. Whereas a man just had full control over it. Something along those lines. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's a good moment of closure for Kyoka, because, you know, this entity has always haunted her and always literally kind of loomed over her for so much of her childhood is now, you can see, it's not some evil ghost here to constantly traumatize her. It's a thing that she had to protect her, you know, the last thing that her parents gave to her. It's the embodiment of her parents' love, you could say.
Yeah, rather than like a deadly thing. It completely changes her relationship with it. And I did like that he's trying to do the explanation of, it's like, oh yes, I hear abilities can be passed down by parents, and don't you see it's a thing? And your one has to drag him out basically and go like, just let her fucking have a moment. That's a lot to take in. And to see her kind of sleeping in Demon Snow's lap, the equivalent of her mother's love, her parents' love. Really, really nice visual. Yeah.
Yeah. And over at Port Mafia headquarters, someone flounces in. What's this, a cop of some kind? Oh, no. It's Ozaki Koyo, the lady of Port Mafia, who's a similar ability, golden demon, to someone like a sword-wielding ghost. And it's just like, where are you out today? Runs errands? Oh, just doing a little something for someone out, some special out there, to let them know I still care about them.
Is it like they like phrase it as like a present for your new job or something?
Yeah, like a gift for congratulate them on their new job, basically. And it's like, you used a lot of resources for that gift, and she's like, worth it. Fucking worth it. So that's a really
kind of... Yeah, it's kind of framed photo. With, you've got,
The lemon bomb.
Ango Sakaguchi from the government, whatever department it is.
Yes.
And he's with someone who I don't know who it is, some woman who's got a sword. I'm not sure we've seen her before, and I couldn't find her on the Bungo Stray Dogs wiki, so I don't know whether she's like, not in the comic, or somebody who you'd know if you'd read the book, one of the light novels or something, or had seen the film. I've no idea.
Just interesting looking character. To feed a few lines.
Yeah, it's like normally like all the other cops have just seemed like normal cops and not somebody carrying a sword.
Like, this person will be important later, but hopefully not in a visual novel. That kind of way.
And in the second half, I can only remember the moral of the story, not actually what happened in it.
So the fucking, what's his name? The were-tiger guy.
Atsuchi
has to go out on a case and solve a thing, because Rambo has decided he's eating lunch and he doesn't fucking want to do it. Oh, and he gives him one piece of advice. Because he's already fucking figured it out to that extent. Look for a flower shop. If you get stuck, and he sent him out, and it's our hologram guy out there, our illusion. Yes, and he's kind of like, yeah, it's a real weird one. He just sort of like fucking got hit by a car, and his face is all messed up. So we're trying to figure out who it is.
Tanizaki. I get my orders mixed up.
That's all right. I keep mixing them up as well. I'm trying to remember how quickly they figure out it's actually the head of the orphanage.
They got his body in the morgue.
His face got completely messed up from the getting hit by a van, so they couldn't tell. They were having to run his fingerprints and seeing what he had on him, that kind of thing.
Actually, he knew somehow, because they pulled the cover back and he's freaking out.
Yeah, he recognized him, but I can't remember how he recognized him. That's the bit that's kind of getting me.
The haircut.
I guess it is a very specific haircut.
Ball cut like that.
It could be sent as well. Or
tormented
like that,
me from all of my childhood.
He recognized something about the guy to be like, the director of the orphanage. And it's like, oh, jeez, I'm sorry, dude. And he's like, no, I'm fucking delighted. That guy was a prick. But it's obviously a little more than that, because he can't seem to get a grip of his feelings about the situation. Instead of investigating who this guy is who died in a random accident, which turned out to be, just a random accident, it's kind of like eating animals. Like, why am I like, I'm not sad, but I should be like happy about this, but I'm not. Like, so he's kind of caught in a weird place emotionally.
He's putting the pieces together, like, why is this guy even in town to begin with? Is he trying to find me? Or why?
Is he trying to fucking hunt me down again or something like that? Yeah.
No, but like, this is following, like, his whereabouts that morning and leading up to the accident. You know, he seemed to be in town, like, to actually, to wish you well, because he'd heard that you were like,
Article in the paper, yeah.
Heard you're living and working here after you crashed space whale into the city, and how you were like pivotal in preventing loss of life, and that you wanted to see it come by and say, good job, you've like actually
you've
come
grown into a man kind of thing, yeah.
Yeah. And you kind of had him locked up for all his childhood and not only because he didn't have a handle on his ability yet, and he was being a were-tiger and going out and probably threatening or hurting or maybe even killing people. So for his own safety and for the safety of others, he had to lock him up like that.
Mm. And it's the thing of you can see from it like that. And again, as they say in the episode, he's not really forgiven for doing any of it, but he decided, I'm going to become what this guy hates so he doesn't hate himself.
Yeah,
if I become the object of his loathing, then he still has a chance to be a decent person, and he can just fucking hate me, and that'll give him the chance to be a better person. I mean, like, you question the motives of it and everything, but you get like it's one of those kind of complicated relationships with parents, basically, is what it is.
Yeah, like doesn't excuse in the least like what he did,
how he did it. Yeah, sure.
Either locking up to stop him turning the tiger gun and hurting people, sure, but like the whippings and the beatings and all of that.
I think that was to make him want to hate him and want to be better than him, that kind of thing. I'm going to show you the worst fucking person. I'm going to be that worst person so you'll be a better person.
Yeah.
Which is a weird way of fucking doing it, but like, as he fucking saw from the newspaper article and everything, it's like, it fucking worked. That guy's a hero.
Well, that actually kind of gets that, like, better or worse have happened to him, he made him the man he is today. And
yeah, that's the thing.
I was struggling with, like, how should I feel about this? Because he was, for lack of a better term, my father. And my father is still dead, and I know he was like a fiend, and he may have had the best intention, but he's still a fiend to me. What way am I going to process this? That's basically when Dad's eye kind of lays it out for him. It's like, you're going to have people like that in your life, you know, who have the effect and that kind of hold on you.
I think what's the way he puts it succinctly? Like, I don't know, you can't really know the inner workings of someone else's mind, but when someone's father dies, they generally cry. And he kind of walks off to leave him to it, kind of thing, which is like harsh, but like probably what he needed to hear in the time, you know.
Mm.
Yeah, that was a kind of an emotional roller coaster, like catharsis and niceness, and then kind of like, that's a fucking hit, man.
It's good to see like some kind of closure on some of these threads, because these been kind of been running along in the background.
Yeah, that's true.
Here and there. God, I see some closure and they aren't being kind of used to dredge up any sort of manufactured drama, should I say?
That's fair, because the characters, like both the characters in questions, you learn about the secrets of their parents in this episode. They've grown a lot over the show, but they had like those those background elements that were still kind of like, yeah, that's still gonna thing. So this allows them to change again, basically. Yeah
like, for instance, I doing something like killed Kyoka into doing something with her ability to kill people with Demon Snow, and then that'll be her sort of kind of like drama and everything like that, and but no, they're actually like taking note of all of that, and they have a definite end in mind for these things. Which is a much more moving and much more engaging bit of writing to see them actually come to terms with this and process these traumas that they've been through, rather than using them to kind of stoke a cool
action scene
later on down the line. Or they can do that as well.
Yeah, no, definitely.
in a much more organic way than just dredging up old memories again. That's putting these ghosts to rest, shall we say. And it's a much more kind of pleasant watch to see these guys you care about, get kind of buoyed up and have some of these wounds heal over before they undoubtedly get a lot more fucking fucked up in the oncoming gang war with Fyodor Dostoevsky.
Yeah.
Next week it's Fitzgerald Rising.
Oh gosh.
Yeah, that's an interesting one. I saw that and I was like, wait, what? But the entire thing of I haven't seen it or anything, but I'm guessing it's something to do with the fake kind of persona, the bigging up of yourself based on nothing, that kind of way. The theme
of the Great Gatsby.
Yes, yeah. The entire fucking theme of it.
It's catching up with three of the other guild members.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned that there's Fitzgerald's things lying around, or probably dispersed somewhere around Yokohama, probably something in relation to that.
Yeah.
But also, presumably, it's be addressing the fact that he no longer has any money.
Like, how did he make that much money to be so powerful?
And then used it all up at the end of the last series.
For punching.
If he's in debt, did he like shrivel down into a feeble like mummy? How does it work?
Hello, 16 minutes ago, Osamatsu Kun anime and two more classics joined Crunchyroll catalogue, but will we be able to watch them in the UK? Yes, we can watch Osamatsu Kun.
My gosh.
Okay.
We can't watch the other two.
No.
Which are Swan Lake and The Wonderful Wizard of Oz.
Oh.
Okay.
Which is odd, because we could watch The Wonderful Wizard of Oz on the... We only put them up on YouTube. So I don't know whether Discotheque shouldn't have done that for the geo-blocking. I don't know. But Osamatsu-kun, yes, made today, in fact. Excellent. I know they put one episode on YouTube up a year or so ago. And so if you like a Yami, it's the 88 Osamatsu-kun, so heavy with the Yami and Chibita in that.
Zany get rich quick schemes.
Yes, exactly. And I think the occasional guest appearance of characters from other strips as well. Righty ho, on to what's next on my list. Did you watch any Star, Twinkle, Pretty Cure?
Yeah, I got caught up a little bit. I'm still one behind, but there were some nice little adventures there. We got to meet Elena's family and see what their deal is. Her dad's from Mexico and her mom is Japanese, but she works as an interpreter for the UN. I think for the UN anyway. Maybe it wasn't the UN. Just as an interpreter anyway. They met and they fell in love with her. She was on a job in Mexico and they came back to Japan and had a beautiful family. But one of them is feeling a little bit kind of lashing out because basically his parents are embarrassing and lovey-dovey in front of people. It's just like, oh my gosh, do your parents all be kind of like waltzing each other around and kissing and holding hands out in public? It's so gross, right? I was hanging out with my friend and they did this in front of my friend and me and it was so embarrassing that's the source of the kind of negativity that caused them to get turned into like a big monster to kind of fight at the end of the episode.
That's a very common thing, though. I mean, like, parents are generally, at the very least, fucking embarrassing.
Yeah, I think they're trying to tacitly sort of prod at an issue there, because in the heartfelt speech to try and release him from this from his monster form, Elena kind of spells out, a while ago, I used to kind of feel the same way, but then I saw that my family is unique and special, and I should be happy about that. I used to test it, kind of subtly trying to probe at, well, my dad is not from here, what my mom is, but nonetheless, we kind of look a bit like our dad. We don't look quite the same as a typical like Japanese family. There's a little bit of something else in here, and they feel like maybe sometimes we don't fit in properly with the rest of the people on the street.
Right.
You know, this kind of feeling like you're somehow kind of different from the other families around you, and you know it's it makes you feel uncomfortable. But this kind of was kind of shrugging off. Well, forget what other people think. You know, if they don't think you belong here, they're just like being bigoted. Like you know, I didn't say that straight out, but you know, I feel like
that's
they're trying
the,
to
yeah, that's what they're going
kind
for.
Of run around that. So a bit of the Tengu lady, because I guess we're going to see all of the the subordinates, the bad guy subordinates, what their extra ability can do. What she can do with her new power is, like, turn people into, like, special versions of the henchmen. So she gets the little butter and turns them into this, like, one of the henchmen, but giant. They gotta fight him at the end, and it was not nice. The one after that was kind of fun, because they go to basically the last biggest, like, rich people planet Zenny, and, get one of these pens, but it's being sold at an auction. So they gotta, like, go into this auction and try and, win this pen out back. Also there happens to be Mao, the international, interstellar idol of the known universe, who's happens to be in town for, a gig on at the very nice auction. Also, has been heard tell there is a phantom thief, a space phantom thief running around called the Blue Cat, who's been known to break into places like this and steal the goods.
Jeez, that's a lot going on.
Yeah. So, hopefully they won't break in tonight and steal the pen. We go from there for a while because they're in the auction, and, like, there was this rich guy from the dragon planet, the dragon family. He's like loads of money. He's buying all the stuff at the auction. And then the last item on the docket is the pen they're after. And it's like, crap, what are we going to do? This guy's got, like, unlimited money. I've got, like, a 500 yen piece courtesy of Hikaru, who, shit, we're fucked. But luckily, we have some donuts that prunes the little alien squid man. He was going to, like, give them to Mao to, be kind of a space idol. It gets to his idol, but they got to turn back. We still have him. But these are the best donuts and the best bakery back in town on Earth. And Malika, the sort of the nice kind of effete proper girl, she pulls this whole bluff because she's been to loads of auctions with her dad, and she knows how the whole thing goes. She says, "These donuts are from planet Earth, and they're from the finest bakery and the finest part and the finest, like, cities, and they're renowned all over our planet. You will find that their taste is incredible, delectable. We will, like, hand them over to our esteemed food critic, who happens to be in the audience, to test them for herself." And the test them upon saying, "Oh my gosh, this donut, its flavor is heavenly, it's unbelievable. I would say on the open market, this donut, you know, such a delectable bill of food could work on a market here, the equivalent of $7 billion space dollars." Upon saying, "Whoa, shit!" Or it's like $1 billion space dollars. Like, "Oh my crap, this is so good."
Wait, so they're running like a Beerus scam where it's like the Earth food is the best food.
Maybe. Well, it's a toy show, so perhaps. So they managed to win this auction by paying for it in these donuts, which they've bluffed to say are worth so much, and they get the pen back. but it gets stolen at the last second by the Phantom Thief, the Blue Cat, and they chase him onto the roof. But who's there but Mao? It's like, "Mao, did you see a blue cat?" "Yes, I may have seen a blue cat, but it happens to be me. Ha ha, it was me all along. Space Phantom Chief Blue Cat is actually me, the pop idol." And they get interrupted suddenly by the Cyclops, a henchwoman, and just say, "What are you doing here?" "I don't know, I'm here to start shit." They demonstrate what they're here themselves, and they get into a fight, but and get the pen back, but more importantly, it's kind of dropping some hints about the Blue Cat, because seems to be aware of who the pretty cures are and has their own little transformation ability and the skills to match. So presumably, you know, there's some connection to the whole pretty cure thing and what's going on with the bad guys and trying to stop them and to get the princesses back, and will undoubtedly be the secret fifth member that are going to recruit into the gang later on down the line. Hmm. You know, so far, so pretty good. But it was fun. I switching it up by going to different planets, and the auction thing was a nice, fun set piece as well. As I said, a week behind, but I think it often benefits a bit from just kind of coming back to it every once in a while and catching up with it, because, you know, when you watch it kind of week to week, you kind of feel you are going through a lot of the same struggles over and over again. So giving it a break, maybe.
Same format, yeah, sure.
Is a little easier, so maybe I might try that from now on. It's a little like fallow and
okay,
and also can kind of more easily remember little threads of things that can run through it sometimes. Because they have a whole thing going on that I haven't even mentioned before about on the bad guy side, that this dogman butler, who is, you know, kind of the subordinate of the Cyclops lady, and he's got some other deal going on. I think he's like the secret strongest henchman, but he's holding back his power, or he's here against his will, because he's often stepped in, you know, to try and de-escalate any conflict that's going on. So he's got something going on himself as well that I'm eager to find out. He's probably going to be the bad guy who will do the face turn and join the good guy's cause at the end, or sometime before the end. Or he'll be the honorable opponent who they clash with. We'll see how it goes. Curious things, but you know, it's picking up some threads here, but dropping a few mysteries our way, so that might actually help with keeping me engaged for the foreseeable, because while it's pleasant, it can be a bit slight, and I kind of wait for it to kind of throw me a few, something a bit more meat in it, which they've kind of done the last little bit, so well, hopefully it will continue that momentum when I catch up with it again.
Talking of slight repetitive Toei shows, Real Soga, episode 10, I just skipped over episode 9. Invincible Counter. So this is focused on Asuna, the pink Real Soga. It starts off with her taking part in a hoopla game, which she manages to win when she accidentally throws the hoopla into the guy running the stall's head, and it lands on the grand prize, which was, I think, like 3 big bags of sweets and snacks. But on the way back home, she can't find her my one really big chocolate bar. What's it called? Something like that. Oh, sorry, That's One Huge Chocolate, it's called. So she goes back and then runs into a couple of louts who try hitting on her. And when she tries to walk away, they grab her wrist. And before she can start fighting them, a kid comes along and beats him up, and she compliments him on his boxing, but then as he wanders off, happy that somebody complimented him, he runs into Creon, who says, "You're a pretty tough guy, I bet I can make a really strong Minosaur out of you," and squirts some of his green goo into his mouth.
You.
So, after the credits run, we meet the Real Sogas fighting a new Minosaur, which is a troll Minosaur. So it's kind of like the traditional Norwegian big-nosed, warty-nosed troll type looking thing.
Going with a Western monsters as well.
Yeah, that tends to be the theme so far until they probably run out. Then they may start moving on to all the parts of the world.
To something else. What else we got? We ran out of dinosaurs.
He's got like 2 shields, which are volcanoes, that he keeps on blocking all their attacks. They get defeated by it, so they go back and recamp, and they're like trying to figure it out. Meanwhile, Asuna's run into the boxer again, and he's got an injured hand, and the lads are trying to figure out what's going on, and they're not listening to Asuna when she's saying, "I think I know a boxer, he could be the cause." And so she goes off in a huff and hides inside one of those like big dome, those big domes you find in Japanese play parks. So Tsurumigo finds her and tells her to cheer up. His vocabulary is rapidly expanding as the episodes go along. And she's like, "Yes, that's right. I should cheer up. Moping around is not going to help." And then she runs into the boxer, and once again prevents somebody from committing suicide, because he doesn't care if he dies due to the Minosaur, because he feels bad about his friend getting hurt, protecting him from a fight previously, and now that guy's art career's been ruined because of him, and he can't approach his friend. His friend appearing to forgive him, but then says, "I'll never forgive you." Oh no, it wasn't really his friend, it was Wizzle, the current head of the Druidons on Earth. Tricking him into further despair to power up the monster even more. Previously to this, this is like the foreshadow, this is what happened with the previous leader of the Druidons on Earth, is that he almost caught Creon saying how stupid he was and how annoying he was. Creon appears to hate all his leaders who are sent in to take charge of him. So I'm assuming by episode 12 that Whizzle will also be killed by the real Smokers. And he'll be sent a new leader that he can gradually insult as the episodes go along.
It's just like basically HR, like sticking new managers on top, that kind of thing.
Yes.
Yeah. That must get very frustrating, yeah.
Yeah, and eventually Asuna takes charge of the combined Ryosoga, which I hadn't realised they could do, maybe they did it in episode 9, is that if one of the other guys opposed to Red puts their like little tiny knight toy into the head slot, they can take charge of the giant robot, and it also changes form, so when she sticks it in, it gets a feminine body shape as opposed to the masculine body shape it's had so far in the series. Then she gets annoyed at the lads trying to give in her conflicting advice in how to fight this monster. It's like one of them saying, you got to use more power, you got to do it faster. And so she tries to do both, and then much like at the start, how she like did something and managed to win, even though it wasn't, and then pretended that it was what she intended to all along. She like, as she's reeling back to hit this monster, she knocks over a big chimney, and which then knocks over a crane, which then knocks over a bunch of very tall, thin, domino-shaped buildings. And it's like this entire contraption that then blocks up the volcanoes on the monster, killing it. It was the fact that it was once it got to like the very tall domino shaped buildings, I was like, oh, this is excellent. Even though they've destroyed half the city themselves. And then she says, yeah, I better do that. And then she gets back and they tell her that they've already finished eating. And they're like, no, it was a surprise. We were pranking you. We've got plenty of meat for you to eat. Cause her thing, one of her things is that she loves to eat because she's the strongest of the group. She needs all the extra energy for her extra strength. That's the episode. Next week, new power up, new dinosaur, the burning armor. And that's not all the Toei stuff I watched this week. And I also watched One Piece episode 885. In the dark recesses of the Holy Land, a mysterious giant straw hat.
Well,
yeah.
No, you don't need to watch it.
Yes, no, you don't need to watch it. That is literally the final scene of the episode. So this is, they're still doing what I mentioned before, is that they're like dedicating part of the episode as they go through the reverie to recapping stuff. Quite often stuff they've not got in widescreen yet.
Oh, so just like, how do you know, Luffy? Well,
yes.
He blew up my kingdom.
Oh, well, that
Atrapaga took it over. Hi, me too. Yes. How about that?
That is pretty much this episode. This episode is basically a meeting of the Luffy fan club. As you've got, who have you got there? You've got Rebecca, you've got Shirahoshi, and you've got Vivi.
Oh, yeah. They're all like, oh my god, he's the best.
Yes, yeah. All comparing notes. Then Dalton and Dr. Kuriha show up.
Wapol shows up, surely.
Yeah, Wapol also shows up with...
isn't Wapol like, kind of happy with Luffy? Because he really landed on his feet.
No, he still doesn't like him, but...
He's doing great!
He doesn't like Wapol.
What's the problem?
Punch me. Punch me in the face. I don't like that.
No. You got better.
I like that his queen refers to herself as a gold digger during the episode.
All honest here, yeah, okay.
He's like, goes off on a rant and everyone just completely ignores him, because then they ask Dalton, do you like Luffy? And he's like, looks around and then conspiratorially says, yes, I really like Luffy.
It's kind of fun. It's kind of like a bunch of adults going around and going like, yeah, One Piece is really good.
And then Kuriha asks Rebecca and Shirahoshi if they've happened to see a blue-nosed reindeer wearing a hat. And they fill her in on what that blue-nosed reindeer wearing a hat is up to, and she fills them in on how the blue-nosed reindeer wearing a hat is related to her, and then we get like a nice chopper recap. Before we get to this mysterious figure in the dark recesses of the Holy Land observing a mysterious giant straw hat.
You gotta keep it on ice.
It's him! You know him!
Hey, spoilers for the anime watchers. They won't find that out for another two episodes, I think.
Just said it was him.
Yes.
Who could that be? You know, it's him.
Well, we don't know if Im's an er yet.
Or an it.
It probably has a head enough to wear a hat, though. That's about all we know.
Yes. Then, finally, we've got Gegege no Kitaro, episode 56, The Bewitching Melody, Elite the Vampire. So.
AKA The Bewitching Melody, Johnny the Vampire.
Yes.
I can go by Vampire Johnny, that's just me though.
Johnny the Mist was his original name.
Oh! In the cover. Okay.
Did
he still play Spanish guitar, or?
I don't know. Well, he definitely, I don't think, because he was originally in a rental manga, according to the wiki, where he was Johnny the Mist. And then he became Elite in the later versions, and then often when they've done the anime version of this story, they've had both the names be in there.
Also, they have to establish in this show that it's like, yeah, we know what vampires are and we don't like them from this show so far, continuity wise.
And next week we get another vampire, and also
I know, yeah. I was like vampire That'd bonanza all of a sudden.
Yes, get through all the other Western yokai stories. Why does Nozomi Otoko end up working with him?
Nozomi Otoko is like, he starts the episode after having defeated an entire episode, but we don't need to explain that. But he certainly learned his lesson at the start of the episode.
No, he has not. He's like, hey,
yeah, totally not.
Hey, Kitaro, you want to get some lunch? Yeah, should I get some ramen? No, I don't want ramen. I want steak. Oh, God, you're no fun to hang out with at all. You don't fucking respect me, man. Get out of here. Get the fuck out of here. And he's kind of like fucking rummaging around in bins, you know. He's not much fucking respect for himself, if anything. When he hears a bewitching melody, this like spicy Spanish guitar playing over the wind, he goes to investigate it, and he's drawn to this place, and this guy there is playing the guitar, he's dancing around, it's like he's ensorcelled by the beat.
They got a connection, man. They get each other right from the get go. I think that's kind of where they team up, but we see Kitaro.
Well, first of all, the important thing is the offer he makes him. How much are you willing to work for? You're off by 2 zeros.
Oh my gosh, that's so much money.
Suggests like what, like 500 yen or something?
It's 50,000 yen. Because
he suggests 50,000.
Because the joke is at the end, you're off by 2 zeros.
Yeah. It was basically like, man, I got this whole, like, evil scheme going on. He was going to get this Kitaro guy off my back. And you're like, yeah, about that? Run interference? Like, I can certainly do that for that much money. Fuck Kitaro. Never like that guy anyway.
Yes. Cause they've been hired by a businessman cause his son is going to this elite school and he's come home saying a vampire attacked him. So can you?
Vampire attacked all his friends and he's coming for him next.
And he's the headmaster of the school, by the way.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like
the yokai experts.
That was kind of the little bit of modern day political satire they've added to the story of like, oh yeah, it's like, okay, the people who go to these
people are going to run the country.
These people run the country. Yes, you don't have a chance. Already, these schools are like puppets controlling the future of the country.
So the guy who controls the school can control the world! And that's what Elite says he's been doing for like 1,000 years or something like that.
Yes.
Yeah, World War II, that was me. Napoleonic Wars, yep. Anyway, everything. I was fucking looked down upon by Vampire Society because I came from like, eating noble oranges. They're all from like long bloodlines and stuff and they all looked down on me. But I fucking did for them because I fomented like a peasant revolt and they all got burned at the stake. Who's laughing now?
Yeah, watching What We Do in the Shadows, which is currently airing alongside this, I was like, oh yeah, this because one of the ongoing storylines is the... is it Guillermo? He's the familiar of one of the vampires. And his thing is, he constantly wants him to be turned into a vampire. And yeah, he's constantly being ignored. I was like, oh yeah, by the time he gets turned into a vampire, that's what he's going to do to these bastards for dragging it out so long. Because there's always like little hints that he's like, he's just pushing too far and he's going to kill these
bastards. As soon as he gets power. Yeah.
Or even before, because, the TV series is a little uneven, but it's definitely worth watching. Anyway, back to this vampire, but that was what it reminded me of, because his secret origin of being like this, vampire. He was a servant vampire bat, wasn't he?
Yeah. This low-level guy climbed a ladder. Took him 1,000 years, but he did it. Or if not, well, I don't know.
Yes.
Yeah, something like that.
And then he pays... Oh, yeah, because he had him... Because has he taken... Yeah, I think he's, like, taken the... He's got the abilities of all of the... he's countered the abilities of all of Kitaro's friends by getting... Nezumiya Tokoh to dress up like a vampire so they'd attack him.
Well, he was dressed up as a vampire in safety gear because he knew they were going to attack him.
Yeah.
And then he pays him his 500 yen he promised. He's like... Mm. And then he pushes him in a lake.
Yeah, which you just sink in, apparently. Yes. But what was the other thing? Like, he needs to observe yokai to hypnotize them, whereas you can just hypnotize humans.
Yes, he has to observe their abilities, because he hasn't observed Kitaro's ability yet. So
yeah, that was it. Yeah. I couldn't remember what the specifics of the observation was. That's it.
Mm.
But...
Whatever. Kitaro shows up at the school trying to fight at least, but he gets to drop on him because he has a bunch of his hypnotized servants, the schoolboys, like in the pews of the chapel, and sets them to work on Kitaro, who can't fight back because he's the guy he's trying to save.
And well, also, that they have super strength since they're hypnotized and they're just strangling the shit out of him.
Besides hypnotizing and just like bring out their like full latent potential, so what these dudes are all holding them down. And this is like, okay, not a kiddo Kitaro. I got like a syringe here with the most powerful dissolving acid known to man. I'm gonna switch it right in your arm, and gonna melt you all. Yeah.
A mixture of hyena, condor, and anaconda gastric juices. Now, this is where I realised this is the line this current anime has.
Well, it won't show Kitaro dissolve into a puddle.
It won't show the guy, him, when a leak gets stuck, it won't show him dissolve either. It glows, rather, his hand glows as it's dissolving. It's like a sense of dissolving.
Yeah.
Whereas, yes, in the comic, this is one where Kitaro gets dissolved, and then it's his dad and Nezumiya Tokoh defeat elites, because...
This one, like, his dad just gets stepped on, basically.
Yes, because his dad does is he... Because everything but the skull is the only thing which remains of Kitaro.
Mm.
And his dad climbs in the skull, and, like, Elite thinks Kitaro's somehow still alive, because the skull's moving around with an eye.
It has an eyeball, I guess. Yes. Yeah. I kind of want to see that. That sounds kind
of
great.
Well, somebody on Twitter assured me that some of the other seasons of anime do dissolve Kitaro. So,
okay.
Yummy.
Yeah, and at the end of the comic, his dad takes him to the only yokai hospital for him to recover.
And Kitaro got better.
Yes.
Yeah. This time it's up to Nezumiya Tokoh to save the day, after he farts his way out of the ocean to...
even though he arrives just in time, he's all out of fart.
Damn it, spent a lot of time myself. I just struggling around the syringe of his, like, knocked away and stuck in the ceiling. It just gets jostled down and sticks in Elite's arm, just in his arm, mind. Or when he melts his amber or dissolves it anyway, and he's like, no, I can no longer play guitar, there was time now. No.
Well, I mean, that's his main power for controlling all those guys, so he's kind of fucked after that. So he summons a legion of bats to commit, like, some sort of candle-based suicide and burn the entire church down. With him in it, obviously. And he turns into, like, a giant fucking monstrous bat. That was pretty rad.
Yeah, which Nezumiya Tokoh stops Kitaro from zapping him and then tells him that his name was Johnny.
Mm.
And that kind of teaches Kitaro to maybe teach Nezumiya Tokoh a little bit better than he does. So he just alienates
him. You don't want to turn him into a complete bastard like this guy. Because Izumi Otoko specifically in this episode was willing to for all you motherfuckers to get killed, and he sells you out. So, yeah, that's literally what happened, Johnny. So, yeah. So, he does treat him to ramen at the end. So.
Even though neither of them can afford to pay for it, they'll figure something else.
Well, we're going to do a runner. No, I'll be grand. It'll be grand.
If Kidder had taken the fee from the businessman for completing the job, might be able to, but he thinks, nah, I don't want your fucking money.
Yeah, yeah.
He didn't learn shit. Because
the guy was like, I don't have time for you right now. Can you just take the money on the desk there? He was thanking him. He did pay him, but he was kind of being a dick about it.
Yeah,
you're gonna fucking haunt it next. You're gonna go straight to hell, my man.
Yeah, I think they used the same character design on him as the Ministry of Defense guy from the comic.
But it was him. I had an important tactical meeting.
Looks like our witch friend is back next week.
Yeah, so it's actually related to vampires we're used to, I guess.
Righto. That's everything for this week. Unless there's anything else, I watched.
That's enough.
Yeah, I watched some Yokai Watch, but it's not this week's. It's like random. Mm. Fan subbed episode one group fan subbed episode one, another group fan subbed episode two, and another group's fan subbed episode four. Nobody's done episode three.
Oh dear.
Admittedly, episode four was the main chunk of it was a satire on Bitcoin. which made me think, I'm pretty sure I've seen more satire on Bitcoin in children's cartoons than I have anywhere else.
So well, they're more at risk to it.
Yes.
Because who is going to be irresponsible with the electricity bill but a small child?
And they've started a Walking Dead parody as well.
Like a parody of the TV show? Or
a parody of the TV show. The Nyarning Dead.
Right, okay.
With Jib and Yarn as the, whatever the main character is. Rick, is it?
I think
everybody else is also Rick because they all seem to be wearing that sheriff
hat or whatever.
Yes.
It
seemed fine. There's like some weird animation, but I think that may just be copying what's going to be in the game,
right?
Because the character designs in the new game look a bit different to the typical character design. They're a bit more lanky. Not sure I like it, but don't have to worry because it's not out yet.
You'll learn to love it, I'm sure.
Anything coming up on Secret of the Sailor Madness?
Trying to find a time to do it, honestly. as I have not a lot of time off lately to do anything that's not this or work. It's an unfortunate side product of this part of the month when I've got night shift, so I don't really have a lot of time to do anything. We're hoping to have a couple of things coming up, again, when we can find maybe an opening to exploit, with yourself, Brian, as has been discussed before, and with others who we've discussed things as well. But as I said, we just need to find opening to literally get the thing in the can and, fucking put it out there. So, like, you'll know when we know. So, I'm sorry to say.
Mm.
On Dynamite in the Brain, currently we should have the anime that didn't make us up with Gary Hedges. We have recorded it now, and that is all about Chicken Takken, Jushin Liger, and Tokyo Pig. And then we've also recorded a famous anime podcast with Gary, which will all be about mat sports. If I have time, I may have to add a bit of add an extra sentence at the start because there's something I forgot to mention. But if I don't do that, we didn't forget Kinnikuman. Man. That's already in the anime. We've already put it in the Hall of Fame.
I forgot
to mention the reason why we didn't mention Kinnikuman. Man. Whereas I did mention why we didn't mention some other things. So yes, it's boxing and wrestling anime mainly, and a few mixed martial arts anime. Including one you may be talking about in the future on Secret of Sailor Madness.
My God.
So find out if it deserves to be talked about on Secret of Sailor Madness by listening to that podcast in the first place.
Sure.
Otherwise, I think you two will be back here next week. Let's go, JoJo. I don't think I will be. Because I'm on holiday. And I don't think I'll have a microphone with me.
Okay.
And I'm not back till the Sunday.
We'll have to make do.
Well, we'll be fine. We'll be fine then. We'll do it.
Yep.
Actually, if it's just you and me, Dwayne, we can record whenever we want.
Now we're watching all these other shows that you hate.
Ah, yes.
The forbidden shows.
At last, they're free.
Okay, so you're looking forward to reviews of What the Hell Are You Doing Here, Teacher?
God. No, that's not forbidden. That's banned. That's different.
What else we got in here?
Rising of the Shield Hero.
Yeah. Wise Man's Grandchild, Granddad, or Grandchild. What else here is it? Isekai Quartet. Oh, that's like a 4-in-1 episode. That's just bonanza.
Like, there's definitely other shows that are coming out right now and are good, but there's a lot of shite there as well. We're watching all the stuff we like, so we're most of the way there. We're
granted. Which could be shite in some people's eyes, but we love it. So,
but we like it. That's the important bit. Yeah.
I can't believe that they don't ask you if you're 18 when you watch Why the Hell Are You Here, Teacher?
Like, does it require heavy censoring, or?
I mean, it is heavily censored, so maybe that's why. But I was like, surely if Rinchi Okoda-chan is asking you this film.
I mean, like, the premise of that is naked woman. So I guess it's more upfront. About
it is
being risque, but I mean, even at that, I wouldn't even call it that fucking risque. Yeah,
no,
unless she like swore really badly, like one time, and no, that's marks the whole series.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know.
I forget. Righty ho, you'll hear from us when you hear us. Goodbye.
Till next time.